meeting to order here on August 19th, the Mesquite location. We'll start off with the pledge. Mr. Jones will lead us in such.
Pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Your lay balls.
Taking this juice here.
Do we have any public comments at this time?
Switch over. Anybody in overtime?
No, you're good.
Okay. A motion to accept the agenda.
I move we accept the agenda as presented.
Okay, we got a motion. Do we have a second?
I'd second it.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Everybody in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any?
Bob?
Aye.
Thank you.
Sorry, Bob. I didn't know we had a delayed reaction. What about approval for the meeting or the minutes of the previous meeting on June 17th? Wow, that was a long time ago.
I move we approve the minutes as presented.
Okay.
For June 17th.
For June 17th.
I'll second that.
Juneteenth. Okay, we have a motion and a second. Everybody in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. We have some thank you notes from young people on the scholarships. Hayden Rawson, Morris Wolfley, Hayden Ainsley, and Hal Thompson. Anyway, nice notes. I think Becky keeps them in the file. Also, along with the report, I would just like to especially thank Melissa for sticking out the Ivy League education and making it through, and God bless her for doing so.
Thank you,
we
Jack.
Can say we have an Ivy League CEO now.
Very loosely, loosely, but yes.
I'm not sure it's a compliment. Well, that's for another debate. Mr. Attorney.
Outside of what's on the agenda, I don't have anything from the board unless there's any specific questions for me.
Okay. All right. All right, it's to you, Ms. Melissa.
Thank you very much. We are going to start with safety first, so Kyle will kick us off.
All righty. We had a good summer break. Now we're back to board report, so we get a report on 2 months' worth of findings for the last couple months. For safety meetings for June and July, we had great meetings, both held by ESCI, was our trainer again. We had topics of SDS workers' right to know, drug and alcohol, fall protection, climbing equipment, MAD, which is minimum approach distance, and second point of contact.
What is it? Minimum approach
distance? So it's the approach distance you can get to an energized piece of conductor.
Oh, okay.
The
it's
minimum.
Not people necessarily.
I mean, it is. It's the employees, what the employee is allowed to get within that piece of a conductor.
Okay.
Before they need to have the different PPE, different tools in place. We had great attendance, it being the middle of summer. You know, July, look at that. We had 54 employees, some summer helpers and interns, and that's the time of year when everybody takes summer vacations. So we're glad to have a good meeting that day. We also held the MSHA refresher training this early August, which is the Mine Safety and Health Administration. We are required to have an 8-hour refresher course in order to go and maintain our facilities on those mines that we service, like Simplot and American Eagle up in Moapa. Good attendance. We have 13 of our employees that are qualified for that MSHA training, and they all went through that course, one day of eight-hour trainings. Outage report for June and July. On the left, you see June. It's got a lot of red in that. All the red is the unplanned outages. All the white is planned outages, which is maintenance. So in June, it stands out to me that there was a lot of unplanned outages. And as I looked through this report, I looked for, what was there a storm? Was there a specific incident that caused this? But quite honestly, as I went through the list, it's just coincidental. There's birds, there's rats, there's bad wire that went bad, meter bases on a building that went bad. There's just the whole gamut was happened that month. There are four different instances in there that customers were out for over an hour, one up to 2 hours. That was on Glendale in that area, and I'm sorry, Chad, but that just takes a lot of time to patrol those lines. I can tell you that those men respond immediately, and they're on it. It's just sometimes during the troubleshooting period, it just takes a longer period to get through it. So July was just a good average month, actually. Very few outages considering the monsoon and such that we typically have. So, service installations for the month of June, we had 46 total, 43 residential, 3 commercial. So quite a number of residential, all in that Pulte area, which is Canyon Crest and Dinosaur sub area. For the month of July, it's down quite a bit if you ask me. 15 total. We have 10 residential and 5 commercial. I almost suspect that maybe it's the end of the year, like they're wrapping up, that they might do the July 31st with their businesses. Annual totals, we're up to 199 for the year of serviced installations. On the right, you can see the historical totals. So we're on average for the years so far. Periodically, I've had discussion with you about the PC labels that are correcting throughout our system. Those are the primary conductor labeling that we determined was our underground facilities have gotten more complex than the labeling that we had been practicing for years past. So early this year, we decided that we needed to have a new labeling system in order to better identify those conductors and solve issues. So I've created this slide here, and I'll periodically update it for you to show the status of us correcting those PC labels throughout our system. You can see on the left, we started with 3,483 in the Virgin Valley. It shows you how much greater it is than the Moab Valley in size of underground facilities. Moab Valley at 1,598. And then at the bottom there, you can see how much we've accomplished since we've kicked this off. It was roughly about March or April when we started this off, really giving it a good effort of fixing these PC labels. And it's just a lot of labor that goes into it. It's not just as easy as go out into the facilities and just taking off a label, putting on a label. We're proving that as we're doing. We're physically proving that cable is the one that is the correct one labeled on our map. So it's physically pulling on it to prove that it goes from end to end, or it's following the identification marks that was from the factory. We have tools we can de-energize it and set a tone through that cable if need be. So it takes a lot of labor for our teams to go out there and remark those cables. Our goal is 30 a week. That's what we've come up with so far. Before we started this program, Cody, Omar, and I came up with that number, and so far that seems like a good number that we're going to maintain throughout this project with all of our maintenance, with all of our paying jobs, with all of our capital projects that we have to do on the day-to-day. 30 corrections per week per valley will take us roughly 2 years to get through that entire project.
On average, how long does each one take?
So, Cody, no more? It varies. I think Cody told me the other day that you guys worked on it for 8 hours one day and you did 20 corrections that one day, if I remember right. But like for Cody's instance in Moab Valley, they aren't as lucky maybe. Or Mesquite has a lot more PCs to do, but Moab Valley has greater distances between those underground facilities. So it's not like they can get through the numbers as quick. So there's just a lot of variance to it. You can see this picture on the right is a picture of Mesquite, and everything that's highlighted in pink is what has been accomplished already so far. So you can't see the underground facilities that are there because it got so clouded. But you know that every one of those roads, by the time we're done, that's going to be just solid pink and across that entire map. So
that'll be a good day.
It will be. Yeah. Those gentlemen back there will be happy when that's over.
We will have a celebration.
You've probably seen on the Facebook newspapers, all the above, that we've sold some equipment through our surplus equipment sales process. This is a new process through a sealed bid that I worked with Byron on creating. It was successful. We went through that entire process. We sold these pieces of equipment in the last week. They were received, and it's always exciting when you see them being sold. They happen to be folks from the area. So we always like to see those pieces of equipment being bought and then being utilized by those in our service territory. So,
well, is there a price set beforehand?
No, it's a sealed bid auction. So
it's an auction.
It is, yeah. Yeah, so. So it all depends on.
Sometimes we'll set a minimum.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll set a minimum if need be. Absolutely, yeah. But for these pieces of equipment, we did very good, and I didn't have to haul them to Ritchie Brothers in Vegas. So I was very happy with that. You've probably seen also our advertisings on the repaving project we did down in Overton. Next month when you're there for a board meeting, you can drive on that brand new pavement. It was successful.
You can walk on it in high heels now, if anybody wants to try.
It was nearly gravel, and it was fantastic. It turned out fantastic. Summer helpers. At the back of the room here, we have three of our four summer helpers that worked with us this year. I'm going to put them on the spot, ask them to stand, say their name, and tell us what valley they worked with real quick. So lead it off there, sir.
So my name's Cody Perry, and I worked for the valley here in Mesquite. After this, I plan on attending SUU to study and become an orthodontist. And I'm just grateful for being able to work here, and I felt like a family, and I really liked it. Thank you.
My name is Isaac Knoll. I worked on the valley here in Mesquite at Virgin Valley. And then after this internship, I'll be serving a mission for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And I really appreciate the opportunity you guys gave me to work here and help my abilities with you guys.
Thank you.
My name is James Daly. I worked for Moapa Valley. Really enjoyed it. I appreciate the board and everybody else who hired me. It was an amazing experience, and I plan on serving a mission for my church as well. So, thank you.
And then we're also missing the fourth, which is Mark Nelson. He's a servant. He actually went into his mission training this week, so that's why he's not here with us. But today, there you go.
You couldn't have waited a day, so he could have made it.
But no, we had some incredible hires this summer. I know the foremen both appreciated these hires that we had this summer. They were able to check a lot off their list, not only with the fire mitigation and pole protection program that we typically do, but these men definitely helped on the crews and gained good experience, but also alleviated some of that workload. Even if it's just cleaning up trash sometimes or digging a hole, I know these foremen definitely appreciate these gentlemen that worked with them this summer. So there's some stats there for you to kind of showcase what these men accomplished as far as our fire mitigation. They were able to brush around 220 poles on our system. Kobe there on the right, standing by that pole, and it's, you know, got a mesquite tree growing up to it. Now, in our realm, that's not as fire risk as other utilities, especially across Utah and northern Nevada, like they have, but we still want to put effort towards that and prevent that from ever coming to happen. So they tackled that brush like that, create a defensible space 10 feet around that pole. And then in some instances, most instances where it's feasible, we wrap it with that pole wrap that you see many of those sales reps that push for us, and creates a great fire mitigation program for us at Overton Power District. And we appreciate these boys' help, and come back and visit us in the future. This is pictures of them. They all got to climb poles. They got to be on the job sites pulling wire, terminating wire. Some took bucket rides, you know, so got some great experience for them. Some sour news, some bad news. Brent Wolf was our new hire that we took on about 7 months, 8 months ago now to fill the role here in Mesquite for the experienced apprentice or journeyman lineman, what we were looking at for at the time. he was a great fit for us, great personality, great work ethic. We just really enjoyed him. But quite honestly, as he's moved his family here, he spent more time here, it just obviously, he wanted to get back home to the Phoenix area, and so he left us and moved back there. So you've probably seen the ad that we flew directly afterwards trying to replace that person, and we are currently seeking a qualified employee to fill that role here in Virgin Valley.
But don't you advertise outside of this area?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, I mean, I saw it in this paper, but...
Yeah, we have NRECA, NWPPA. We have it, yeah, it's basically across the West, and NRECA is across the nation.
Desert areas.
Yes. Yeah, but that, you know, that's the hardship. We definitely need the qualified person, but also creates the hardship because then you worry. We want them to come fill a role for us and please give us a few years of experience. But like Brent here, barely made it 7 months for us before we moved on. So it's definitely a hardship for us. But we are definitely seeking and pursuing all applicants that have qualifications that come to us. So, any questions or thoughts for my presentation? Thank you.
Thank you, Kyle. Next, let's have Randall talk about engineering services.
Thank you, Lisa. Okay, some great news. So this is the last fiber pole into Tortoise substation. This is on the line, so all of the conductors and the fiber have been pulled in on the line. That portion's complete. That's the good news. The other news is that we still have jumpers to do. Jumpers to do throughout all the poles. We have a bunch of transition poles. We have a bunch of dead ends. And that's going to take probably another 2 or 3 weeks. So, and also we have fiber that has to be spliced also. And that's going to take another 2 or 3 weeks. So we're hoping to have this energized through all the testing and commissioning to have it energized before the end of the year. That's the goal now. That's good news.
Yeah, but I thought it was going to be March.
No. Go back through the records. July was the actual construction.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
July was for the contractor. That didn't include the testing.
So the testing takes like 4 or 5 months to get it all.
Now it's only going to take
about a month, couple weeks to a month for testing. But there's also the commissioning, the breaker, the apparatus testing, commissioning, all that stuff. It's going to take about a month to get through that stage of it.
We need to focus on what's going to be done before the end of the year. That's our main goal.
You're
going
to guarantee that now.
I guarantee that. I guarantee that.
Okay. Make sure that's in the minutes.
I just guarantee that.
I'll write that down.
If not, we're firing Kevin because it's on him now.
No wonder he wanted it in the minutes, Kevin.
So we talked about that pole I just showed you was a transposition pole. And if you notice that, the jumpers are going through different conductors, right?
Yeah.
Okay, we do that for two main reasons. One is it helps line loss. So in the engineering design, when you transposition structures, it's based on over 10 miles. So anything over 10 miles, you do that as an engineering practice. And that helps mitigate line loss. It also helps mitigate AC induction into the ground. Yeah. And that's going to come up here on the next slide. We're going to talk about that a little bit. Mm-hmm. So this gives you kind of a diagram when they talk about transposition, moving A down to where B was and moving B up to where A is, and they just transposition them around. And we did that 6 times throughout the line on this project. So here's the budget for the line right now. We're at $17 million with the approved budget. Total costs are $14 million. We have an estimate about $1 million to finish, plus $500,000 for cathodic protection. So 3 years ago, when we started this process, we're required to get all the right-of-ways and concurrences with anybody that's in the area that we're going to build a line in. One of the gas companies required us to submit our design to their engineers to put through their model to see if we're going to add electrical currents into the ground, which is going to impact their gas line. So their model, after they did that, they said we were going to put more stress on their lines, and they wanted us to mitigate it. That mitigation at that time was $400,000. Today it's probably $500,000 or $600,000. So what we decided to do, we found an engineering company that would take and measure the AC induction currently on the line before we energize.
On the gas line.
On the gas line. And then once we energize, we're going to bring them back and check that and see if actually we did put more interference on their line. And if we can show that in an engineering model, I think we can refute the $500,000 and save that money. So we're looking at possible $500,000 savings. Projected under budget is, I hope, to be about $2.7 million under budget.
Wow. That's great.
Inside Tortoise, we had to connect the 138 line into the bus in Tortoise. And this is the circuit breaker on that bus. And also you can see the conductors landing on the bus without the jumper. So they still need to build jumpers to bring it down to the switches. And I don't know if those are done yet. Did you know today?
Yeah.
They're done. They're done as of today.
They had to do some stuff in there, but they were getting close.
That's great. So on that portion, just the bus connection for the 138 line, $2 million budget, $1.6 in cost to date, another $100,000 complete, and under budget about $275,000. Long drive switch yard is complete, except for landscaping. Raptor substation is all complete, except for landscaping. And we have testing that's complete, and we're running it with ECI. Once they concur, maybe a couple weeks to energize those up.
Yeah, we're looking at the first of September to energize.
Approved budget was $10 million. Total cost to date, $12 million. Estimated cost to complete is $220,000. That's received the billing for our testing and commissioning and also the landscaping. Crown contributed $2.7 million, so we're projecting an under budget of $697,000. We did, if you notice, we advertised for landscaping for those two projects. Cocopelli was the low bidder. Long Drive was $58,000 and Raptor was $22,000. A WEC update. So we have submitted all of the standards that we're responsible for on our side. We have some PRC standards that we've had to go out to an engineering firm to help us with. It has to do with protection and how our relays respond to specific outage situations and how, if they're synchronized properly. And we don't have the model, nor the software, nor the expertise to run those scenarios. So they have to run these scenarios and do a report to make sure all of our relays and our communication is synchronized. And that's part of one of the WEC requirements. It's PRC 27 and 26, and we hope to have that completed by, I think, November, to have that done. And other than that, we have set up and submitted all of the requirements that we have. The implementation plan is complete. They are adding another standard to us. It's called the TP, which is the Transmission Planner. And we've asked them to extend that beyond the April deadline. So we're talking right now to get a couple of consultants to help us work on that. It's something that's out of our complete realm to be a transmission planner. It's something we were hoping that another company would do for us, but they're not interested in taking on that responsibility right now. Internal controls we're continuing to work on. That's probably the last thing that will get completed as we're going through and checking to make sure that we have everything set up to monitor and to take care of what we need to do on each one of these standards. We're still working on that. Here's the update. So we're 93% complete. What's left of those PRC 26 and 27, which we're getting some help with from a contractor, and we will be ready for audit in anytime after April when we're supposed to have the completion. As we submit standards, WEC right now is doing kind of a mock audit with us. They'll take the standard that we supply to them, and they're going through and making suggestions to us on things that we could change or make better. So it's helping us so that when we get the audit, we should be fine. I have probably a 95% confidence that it's going to be fine, 95%.
And they do that usually just because we're brand new to
WEC? They've completely changed from 10 or 12 years ago, but they're doing that to all new registers going through that process to help them. They want us to be compliant. They want to help us. It's a complete different change from 10 or 12 years ago.
Yeah.
There's some large projects we've kind of talked about in the past. I just want to give you a little bit of an update. So Moapa West is the big project up in with the development in Moapa. We are still waiting on the study from NVE. They've told us that it will be done hopefully this month, but then they still have 2 months to review it internally. And once we have that, we'll be able to share that with Moapa West, and hopefully by the beginning of next year, we'll have kind of an idea of where they, what process they're going to have and what, how they're going to proceed.
We could supply the power, how much is needed?
Yeah, it's how much maybe energy is going to charge us, or Moapa West, to be able to build the infrastructure to get 700 megawatts to their system and their Reed Gardner. Bridge Source is still working on right away, and they're going at a lot slower pace, but they still are progressing. There is a Mesquite Data Center. Did we talk about that before? Mesquite Data Center?
We had a brief.
Just briefly, though.
Briefly. This will be brief, too. so we got the feasibility study back, and we shared it with them, and we shared some estimated costs for them to be able to come into the Mesquite area for 20 megawatts. And it's about a $13 million for them to come up with to be able to build the infrastructure to feed them. They are a developer, so they need a client. They need a customer. So right now they're trying to find somebody that's willing to pony up the $13 million to come in and do that project.
Well, only 20 megawatts. I mean, we heard numbers thrown around of hundreds of megawatts. This is fairly small then, right?
Yes, but they asked for up to 100.
To 100.
But we've only studied 20. That's all we're able to give them at this time. Yeah.
And we had the policy of only supplying up to 10 before they make have to pay for all the upgrades or something like that?
No, they would have to pay for all of the upgrades, but the 10 megawatts that we discussed was their own power contract so that they would get no benefit for the blending of our rates. So we're protecting our customers from our legacy hydro and solar.
Okay, yeah, thank you.
And the other is a manufacturing facility which we have an NDA with, and it is still progressing. They have a couple of locations here and also down in Phoenix that they're looking at, and we continue to meet with them. And that's about a 20 megawatt load also. Any questions? Nice.
Thank you, Randall. Substations, Kevin?
Okay. So the RN substation, I know it's been a minute since we've talked about it, but we received the issue for construction drawings for that, which means we can start building that substation. So we've got a concrete contractor. We should have them starting just about the end of the month. And then when they're done, we're going to have our in-house. We're going to do it in-house. We're going to do the underground, which is the ground grid, conduit, cable tray. That's all going to be done in-house. And then our building comes in February, and now our steel looks like it's going to come in February for the substation steel. And so we can start putting that together. Starting in February, we'll start build that substation and make it look like a real substation. Financial on this one. The projected budget was $8.7 million. To date, we have in POs $8.25 million. What's left to buy is conduit, ground grid, bus work, fiber splicing, testing, commissioning, all of that still. So it's looking like we might be right around that 8.7 million, but there's a chance we might be over that 8.7 million. Substation steel quote came in this week. We put it out to 8 vendors and only 2 vendors replied back. And both of those vendors were right around $290,000. Yeah, $290,000 was real close to what those 2 quotes were. One of them had a 2-year lead time, and the other one we was able to talk to, and they confirmed they could get it down to 6 months for us. So in comparison to that, we did Raptor substation steel was $197,000. There's more steel at Raptor than there is here in this substation. So just kind of a comparative to Raptor. So it just shows you that prices are still going up. Tortoise T5 transformer. You can see there, we had hired the crane to move the old transformer that's sitting there. That's a 75 MVA. We moved the transformer, pad's been wrecked out, new pad is being built as we speak. This project was budgeted $5.5 million, and to date we spent $4,860,427. This project is basically most of the big expensive items have been paid for already. This is just, we drop a transformer, make the connections, and that's all that's left. So we'll have crane charges, some wire, not a whole lot. So this one looks like it's going to be under budget.
What's the plan for the 75?
That we haven't really discussed. We talked about bringing it online if that mine comes online, but we might look at selling it and getting something bigger if we need it. You know, it all depends on, there's that crystal ball thing. What's going to happen out there in Moapa? We really don't know yet. So we will leave it sitting there on that dock for a little bit and then try to figure out in the next year or so what to do with it. This is the steel cage that went into that transformer pad. That transformer is dry weight. It's 200,000 pounds, just over 200,000 pounds. And fully dressed, it's 350,000 pounds. So it's quite a structure that needs to be built to hold that transformer. It's pretty large. And then it's got an oil containment all the way around it too. It took 101 yards of concrete for the first pour. And so they chose to pour at, I think it was 3 a.m., and able to get all of those concrete trucks all at the same time batched to them. Otherwise, they would have had to compete with all of the construction that's going on in Vegas to get concrete. So they did it super early in the morning so they could get a continuous flow of concrete trucks. And this was a couple of days ago after they had finished pouring. Today, you can see the forms around on the right-hand side. That's the stem wall around that concrete containment. So they were pouring that today, I believe.
Yes, it's done today.
It's done today, okay. I haven't checked on it today, but I think they were doing it. So, Randall touched on the 138 connection for the Gila to Tortoise line. This is just another shot. Basically the same picture you had, isn't it?
Yeah, you plagiarizer.
I got a couple more. There's a different angle of it.
Hey, we're not going to get 10 pictures of different angles.
On the right-hand side, I just wanted to kind of take a comparison. The breaker on the right, the closest one to you, is the old-style breaker. That is it's a hydraulic breaker. And the one on the left is the new spring mount. It's got a motor that winds a spring that creates the effect, the open and close. The one on the right, we've started trying to phase those out because we started having some maintenance issues with them. And once this project's all done, we hope to have all of those at Tortoise phased out. That being our main, most important substation, we didn't want to chance having those fail on us. This is what's going on the inside of the building. So the panel that sticks out on your left-hand side, looking at the face of it, that's the controls for that new bay that ties into that Gila line. And then the picture on the right is the back side of that. Just something, Dixie Power contacted me on Monday and asked if we could possibly backfeed the Littlefield area. They had their power supply had some problems with the transformer, and they were lacking some power coming to them. And so they wanted to know if we could back them up if they needed us to, and of course we can. We fed into Littlefield before. The problem with doing that is they have to de-energize before we can energize. We can't tie those two systems together and keep it running. We have to basically de-energize. So if they did ask us for it, yes, we can. We can feed the little field, that whole Arizona area. But they'll have to have an outage to turn that on and then basically bring it back off again. So we do help them out when they need it. We've done it before in the past.
When you say an outage, how much time are we talking for the transition?
10, 15 minutes.
Oh, not bad. Okay.
Yeah. Any questions?
Thank you, Kevin. Now we'll have Scott with Administrative Services, please.
We'll get to the exciting stuff.
Oh, gosh. Jonathan's coming up.
I know. All right, so this report is not exciting. I don't think that we want it to be exciting. Otherwise, we're in bad shape. The training for the month of June and July, we had 93 and 98% attendance. I want you guys to remember that first security lesson. Verify before you trust. Always confirm identities and requests before providing access to sensitive information. Next thing we learned about was social engineering can bypass security and protect credentials at all times. In the month of July, we had two people voluntarily take more training. I think that's a good way to put it. We were really doing well in the beginning of the year. It's kind of, you know, one of these was a really seasoned employee, and they may be in this room right now, but
we're not going to say
who it was. But they are definitely doing more training. Email spam. We had 36,273 total email. 5,200 of those were spam, and we sent out 4,733 from our system.
What do you mean sent out?
Yeah. The employees sent 4,700.
That's part of business. It had nothing to do with this.
Yeah, I just put it up there.
Okay.
Steven got me that data. I was like, oh, we'll just throw that in there to kind of give you a little different view.
Oh.
Firewall blocks by country. United Kingdom in there is at number one. Ooh. And you can look there at the countries.
I don't see Iran on there.
Iran is not on there. Our server system uptime remains very, very stable at 100%. Our database backup and restoration plan is going wonderfully. We're at 100% all the way across the board. The backup and restoration has been tested, and it's tested each month. And then the ISAC, we're still monitoring what's going on out in the utility industry. We saw about 150 emails in the last 2 months, and our training lined up perfectly with what the three patterns that we're seeing in the industry: social engineering and credential theft, the leading cyber threat. So of all of those emails that are being sent in from utilities, that is the number one thing that we're seeing out there. People that are trying to use phishing, impersonation, help desk manipulation to obtain legitimate credentials and access. The next thing we have is exploitation of known software vulnerabilities. Steven and Merlin spend a lot of time patching our system, our firewalls, our switches, our servers, and then physical intrusion theft and infrastructure surveillance. They're seeing a lot of photography with drones around critical facilities. I don't think we've seen any of that, but that is a trend out there. That's my report.
Thank you, Scott. Jonathan, if you'll give us the update on the financials.
All righty. Thank you. So in the finance department, we began working on, internally, we've been working on the 2027 budget. So outside of the 2026 reporting, that's what we have been working on the past month I've started. So to begin on our statement of operations, our line one operating revenues, there in column D, we had $6.5 million in revenue. And our line three total cost of purchase power is $4.6 million, which was the main contributor to our total cost of electric service on line 20 of $6.1 million. And then our interest received on investments on line 22, $25,000. And then our net margins on line 29 for July were $382,000. So we actually budgeted for July to have a net margin of right over $1 million. And so we were right under $700,000 low on our margin. And that was due to the cost of purchase power. I actually budgeted that on line three there to be $3.9 million. Actually, it was $4.6 million. And this is my first time doing the budget. And this, so that was totally on me. And we are, despite that, actually in August also, I budgeted a similar amount for power, same as July. So it's going to be a little, it's going to be similar to what July's is. So those 2 months, we're going to have power costs that are going to be quite a bit more than what I budgeted. But with that, if we look at our year-to-date margins the year-to-date budget margins on column C down at the bottom line 29, we have a $2.5 million margin for our budget, but our year-to-date is $4 million. So we're still above our budget by $1.5 million. And I wanted to talk about why. So we just talked about some errors in the budgeting and trying to figure out what those power costs were going to be in July and August. If you look at line, so I can do it here. If you look at line 16, let's see if I...
Interest on long-term debt?
Yeah, right here. So we budgeted almost $1.5 million on interest expense. And so far this year we've had just over $1 million. So, gratefully, we borrowed way less than we were anticipating this year and are paying way less in interest expense.
Randall's way under budget, that's why, right?
Yeah. That's a big part of it.
You're welcome,
Thanks, man. So, $400,000 there is one of the largest ones. And then the other one is this right here on line 7, distribution expense, our maintenance distribution expense. So we budgeted $2.1 million, and year-to-date we're at $1.6 million. So this started showing up in March. I think Mr. Levitt brought that up, of what the big difference was, why we're so low, so below our budget. And initially I thought that this was due to... In 2025, we had an expense that I thought was going to be reoccurring that was close to $400,000 that was not. And initially, I thought that that's what the discrepancy was between the budget and actual. And so that when I did the budget back at the end of 2025, I thought that this expense was going to be reoccurring. And we found out that it was not. But then I thought we were going to have expenses that were equal to that one, that would still keep our, still have our budgeted cost for this line to be equivalent to $5.5 million for the entire year. But those costs weren't reoccurring, and we weren't having costs that were gonna be annualized costs that were replacing that. So again, that was a budgeting error on my part, but it was in the other way. So that was around $500,000 at the end of the year. We had to make a budget. I had to do an analysis and estimate for what our total cost would be in 2025 in this line. And the actual came up being lower than what I anticipated for our budget. So it was $500,000 less. And I based that off of our 2026 budget. For 2026.
So our net will be more.
Correct.
That's good news, isn't it?
Yeah.
Jonathan, September and October, we should have higher margins because we're always a month behind our revenue.
Yeah.
To our, those cooler months, we use less power.
Yeah.
But we're bringing in the hot months, and right. So we get more revenue on those months. So we should see some higher margins.
Yeah.
September, October.
Yeah, we're for our, I anticipate that for August, our August margin will be around $1 million. We're projecting to be, even though it was, we're going to have the increased cost that I didn't plan on, we're still going to, I'm projecting that we're going to have around $1 million.
Because of the heat in July, mm-hmm. July bill.
Yeah, and then September also is going to be, it's going to be north of $1 million also, so.
That's a perfect, I'm just going to interject really quick and say that you're right. Normally, those shoulder months are a boon for us. The thing that we're facing is that Lake Mead is at 1,040.8 right now, and the Bureau of Reclamation anticipates now, originally it was going to be that we would see 1,035 by July of 27, and then March, and now last week's report was that it will be November of 2026 that we will lose those turbines at Hoover. And so that energy that we normally receive at that time of the year will be replaced with market contract from Tenaska. So that is much more expensive and then not anticipated. And so we could, for the first time ever, hit bandwidth charges with Tenaska as well.
And the Lake Mead situation actually is going to obviously continue for several years, although I see they've made some adjustments, but nothing to really recover. It's to try to hold the line.
Try to hold it, correct.
Yeah.
You're right. And that they're anticipating that those Whitehead turbines could be in by 2029. I've never seen a federal project come in on time or on budget, so, but this might be the time that they prove me wrong, so.
Yeah, but it still won't make up all the power lost. It will provide us power, but not what we were receiving.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
So, any questions about the statement of operations before we go to the balance sheet? Then? Mm-hmm. Okay, so on the left-hand side there, our line 5 net utility plant, we closed with a value of $170 million. And we also have our line 8 investment in associated organizations, which is our patronage capital, then our line 15 cash, line 18 temporary investments, which is our meter and Goldman accounts, then our line 23 inventory, which all make up our total line 29 total assets of just over 200 million.
I'm sorry, but line 8, the associated, what the heck is that? What's kind of associated organization?
The associated organizations are all the co-ops that we're members of. So we're a member of our Meridian, which is our software, of CFC, which is our lender. There's Western United, which is a vendor.
Do we give them some money to belong or a deposit? So, but it's both. Still our money, essentially.
Yeah.
But
both. We have to. There is money that we pay to belong to those organizations. And then every year, it depends on, we receive patronage capital every year. So they're not for profit entities, they're a co-op, and so they
so
return
they
their margins back to
margin
us.
Back, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that makes up our initial investment, and the majority of it is what's a return back to us.
Okay, thank you.
Based off their margins.
I saw that line. I never know what that was.
Yeah, good question. So then on line 36, we had on the liability and equity side, our total equities are at $136 million. Then we have our line 43, total long-term debt at $49 million, and then our line 48, accounts payable, and then our total liabilities and equities on line 20 or 57 at 200 million. So equity is a percentage of assets, and some of our ratios here, we'll start with this one, 68%. is our year-to-date and our times interest earned ratio is 4. I don't know what's going on here, but there we go. 4.77 year-to-date. And our modified debt service coverage with estimates to the end of the year, 2.08. And our cash, there in the middle, and bolded, and checking account, $6.6 million. That again, Meter joined with, Morton and Meter joined, and so it's now Meter. So the value in our Meter account, there at the bottom, $5.6 million, and then our Goldman Sachs account at $862,000. So gratefully, we haven't dipped into that anymore, and we've haven't had to borrow as much, thanks to Randall. And we are able to maintain that value there. So then this is in the Meter account by security type and duration, graphical representations, and then our assets in the Meter account, sorted by maturity date, earliest to latest. Total customers, we had 19,314 as of July, which represents that's a net number, represents a reduction of 12 from June. I look back in the past several years, and we didn't have a reduction in July up until I think it was in 2022. Our year-to-date, I'll just give you an idea, our year-to-date increase to give you an idea of where we're at. So far we've added customers in 2026, we've added 135 customers since January, and 2025 at the same time, we added 205. And in 2024, we added 301. So
it is slowing down.
Yeah.
The growth is slowing, essentially.
Yeah. And then on our next slide here, these are connection fees. It's a little bit different than what Kyle reports, but this is the fees when we receive the fees, not necessarily when they're made. The connections are made. So in July, we had 28 receive connection fees for that amount. This amount, however, year-to-date connection fees in 2026, we've had 250. In 2025, we had 242. So pretty close to what we had in 2025. But in 2024, we had 387. So, just slowing a little. Current billing arrangements for July, residential customers, 16,972 total value with 64, and then five commercial customers with a value of 2,189. Last year at this time, the total amount was 19,000, but there was only one commercial customer at $500. So it's similar to what we were last year. Roundup program, there are the values or balances there in each valley. Grateful for the contributions that are made there, and we don't skim anything off the top of that. So it costs us a little bit of money to do that, but go straight to the schools. So as of July 31st, our balance, as reported on the balance sheet, we have $49 million in outstanding debt with CFC, and these are the details there. Our last payment was made on time and paid in full on June 30th for just over $1.5 million. And we did make a draw for $1 million there on the last one back in the 1st of July. And that represents the first of the new portion. So there was $8 million approved, and then we had an additional $8 million approved. So this was the first $1 million of the additional $8 million. So, and we did that for 20 years. And the interest rate, because of the uncertainty of the economy, was higher now than it was back in March. So.
Now we did a, where you can renegotiate that, what do we call that?
Yeah, repricing.
Repricing.
We did a three-year
on that.
A three-year on that.
Seven, 7/129 we can reprice.
Yeah. But it was for a 20-year. And we've been reassured that we can reprice those as many times. At that time, we can reprice for a year, or we can fix the term. We can do it for 3 years. We can do it for 5 years. And then when those repricings come up again, then we can reprice them again or fix them.
Really? So at 3 years, we could reprice any, and then we could reprice that one again or new ones? No,
yeah.
That one?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Problem is you're betting that it's going to go down. Right. It goes up.
Yeah. You don't reprice then, do you?
Well, no, they're going to reprice at the higher rate.
Yeah.
Oh, they are. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah. That's.
Yeah. That's,
yeah. You have to reprice it or pay it off. So you don't have the option to keep what the current pricing is.
That's why those 1.82s, there was no repricing on those.
Sure.
Yeah. Did you want to add anything on this?
Well, some of them there were. No.
No.
Thank you.
So this is our revenue by customer class and our KWH sold by customer class with the averages there on the right. And then they are summarized here at the bottom on the next slide. So our monthly cost, whenever our energy costs increase, we have to buy more market power and it costs more. And so our monthly cost goes up. So that's why you see the increase there in July. Mm-hmm. However, our customers in general, the average, their costs on average go down with the more per kWh. That they purchase, so that's why it goes down, or that's why it's gone down a little. And then our 26 average cost there is 6.89 cents per kWh here to date. So, and that's all I have, unless you have any further questions.
Thank you, Jonathan.
You made an attempt at humor. That was outstanding. Nothing making progress.
I want to say welcome back. I've missed you. It is a nice reprieve for us to not have a board meeting. I went on a beautiful week-long vacation with my family that I'm thankful for, but it's good to be back. I know we have a heavy agenda, and our reports were long because we haven't reported to you guys for a while, so I'm going to try to keep this short. I have a few employees that I would like to recognize. Can I have the clicker, please, Jonathan?
Sorry.
That's okay. Back in June, on the right, you can see three of our linemen. We have we are missing one, Zach. Was in this event as well, but he called in on picture day and so lucked out and didn't have to be shown at the board meeting. Our men were working on Sand Hills Boulevard, and there was a pedestrian that had a health incident on the sidewalk. All of our men rushed over to help him, and they took the company-provided AED with them. They did not end up administering the AED because the EMTs did show up. But they were there to help not only with traffic, with the gentleman, and then they assisted the EMTs in getting the gentleman into the ambulance. I think that you have to forgive me. it's emotional because it isn't that we train them or that we provide the AED for them. It's that they stopped in a moment's notice to try to save somebody's life. I'm so proud of them. I'm so, so grateful for the employees that we have. On the left, we have Michaela and Felicia. They had a choking incident in our office. A young woman was choking, I believe possibly on one of the suckers that we give out free. But we're going to leave that part out if Vernon puts anything in the paper. That woman started choking, and as is normal in choking incidents, she left the building and went outside. And Felicia immediately called 911, and Michaela rushed to her aid and offered the Heimlich maneuver and saved that woman. And so, again, incredible. It isn't that we do safety meeting every month. We get trained on these kinds of things. We are taught how to use the AED. We're taught how to do the Heimlich maneuver for choking, but we're not taught how to just be incredible people. And that is the hiring that we do and the piece that I am so proud of as the CEO of OPD5. Our family is just literally incredible. So when you see those people, and if you don't recognize Zach, well, that's his fault for not making it in the picture. Please commend them, because I'm very proud of all of them. Mm. We also had an employee that was in a car accident last month, I believe it was. And this was a very unique accident that I wanted to share with you guys. So he was in the right side lane at the stoplight just down the hill from us. You can see that that is the McDonald's on the corner and the Eureka Casino. Mm-hmm. And a Tesla car exiting the drive-thru of McDonald's mistook the gas pedal for the brake pedal. Mm. And came off of the drive-thru and hit into him when he was parked there. This could have been a very serious accident. Thankfully, he was alone, and so he had the protection of being on the driver's side. But I will show you the video that they received from the traffic camera, and it shows you just how sincerely serious this accident very easily could have been. Stephen, how do I push play?
I think if you just advance it, it should go. If not, I'll click it.
Push it down.
Oh, whoa.
And to poor Kyle's credit, it was a Tesla, so he couldn't even hear it coming, you know, like it just, it was that quick. I'm so thankful that he is okay, and thankfully so was the driver and the passenger of the car. But that was quite a hit, and you see, if we play it one more time, Stephen.
You got a head of steam up.
They don't even hit the rocks. So quite incredible. We're thankful that Kyle and his truck, which he cares very much about, are both okay. Jack alluded to earlier, I spent a week in Cambridge at the university, the Harvard University Executive Leadership Series. I have to wear my glasses so I can read this. This program focused on several issues directly relevant to the challenges and opportunities facing our industry. So we talked about strategic responses to unprecedented change, stakeholder engagement and partnership development, creating a shared organizational vision, and developing AI technology beyond just ChatGPT. I have to say that this experience was absolutely exceptional. I didn't know what to expect. I never thought that a redneck girl from White Pine County would ever be able to show a picture with her favorite Harvard professor, yet here I am. So I'm proud of that. The group that I was with, there were 29 other CEOs from across the nation that was selected to be a part of this cohort. The entire thing was sponsored by CFC, Federated, and NRTC. So all of the CEOs that were in attendance only had to pay for travel to get there and to stay. But everything else was taken care of, and it was an absolute first-class process and program. I enjoyed every single second of it. I came back feeling really inspired and thankful, and there will be more to come from this as we do implementation practices four strategic initiatives, some new technology implementation that I want to for us to work on, and some change management strategies as well. I'm very excited about everything I learned, and I think it was 100% worthwhile. So I appreciate you guys supporting me and being able to do that. Jack and I attended, now I can't move, there we go. Jack and I attended the NREA board meeting, an industry update in Malta, Idaho. And there are several significant issues that we are dealing with NREA. And I'll talk with you guys about just a couple of those. NRECA, the national organization, has made the decision to support President Trump's ratepayer protection, pledge. And they have reached out and asked all of the rural utilities to sign on and endorse this pledge. As we as CEOs looked over that pledge and what it was that President Trump's ideas are, we have decided that instead of signing on to that, we would do a prepared press release and response. And I gave each one of you a hard copy of that press release. The underlying concept is that these extremely power-intensive loads will develop and bring sufficient generation resources with their projects and thereby increase generation availability across the nation and ultimately reduce costs nationally. It is considerably more complex than that. So what we did was said we're going to send a letter to NRECA. We're going to have our own press release that says, as agnostic, we are load agnostic. When Jack and I were at NREA, we heard a talk from Will, who is the executive director for Idaho. And he said, the way that we say it in Idaho is that we serve both churches and brothels. We don't pick what business we serve. If they meet our requirements, it's our duty to serve them. And so while I'm not encouraging us to take on any more churches or brothels, I'm just saying that that's a complex issue that has a lot of pieces that affect rural communities very much. The other thing that we're seeing is that as these data centers, these large data, especially the giga centers, are working on generation assets to fulfill this, then we ourselves as rural utilities are feeling that pinch already. Kevin reported to you just a few minutes ago that he had 8 vendors that he normally can get steel from. Only 2 even responded, and now the price and the timing is significantly different. And so we're seeing that supply chain issue. We also have been in talks with our market provider, and just in a few months' time, the entire Western market has jumped by nearly $10 per megawatt hour because large PPAs are being signed across the state, across the nation. So I left that press release for you guys. I think it's important that we know, that our customers know, that we're working to protect them as much as we can, and we always have and we always will. That those large loads are not new to us. Maybe the size of load is new to us, but we've been serving large loads, especially across the state of Nevada. We have neighboring utilities that are serving large metals mines that are already serving huge loads. We know how to do that, but to just easily say, okay, if you want to build the data center, all you have to do is build generation, and then somehow we'll work out the transmission. That's not the way that it works. That's not the way that our grid works, and it's not the way that our industry works. And so we have not signed on to NRECA's support of that. We are not opposed to it, but we're not putting our name out there in support of it. So that's the update that we have on that one. The next is that we are considering joining all of the CEOs, I guess the board approved, I should say, the board approved for us to advance a proposal to the Nevada legislature that would authorize the formation of a joint action agency. Overton Power is already a part of a joint action agency, SSEA, and that is included is SNWA, Boulder City, Overton, and Lincoln. The reason that it's important for us that we've talked about this and a few of these things we will discuss in executive session, but one of the reasons that this is important for us to put this forth to the legislature now is that normally joint action agencies are limited to quasi-governmental entities, and so we've never been able to have something where our co-op neighbors could join us. And it's quite interesting. So co-ops can't join joint action agencies, and yet co-ops can get all of the grants and the districts and quasi-government can't. And so what we're hoping is to put together this joint action agency to be able to have more increased buying power and scale for complexity of many different things. Grants, purchasing, there's a number of ways that we could use that entity. Lisa, our executive director, and Jesse Wadhams, our lobbyist, will be leading that effort. And I anticipate that I will be taking trips, likely some with Jack as well, to Carson City to further that that along as well. The concept has already received support from Governor Lombardo's office as well as the Governor's Office of Energy, which is encouraging at this early stage. And I will keep you guys informed as we progress through that. You may have legislators that are reaching out to you to ask about this, and so I want to make sure that you guys are very well informed.
So have they already decided who's going to introduce the bill?
I think they were working on that, but they haven't. It's quite interesting. We had the legislature in 27, but we're so far behind, supposedly, by being in August of 26. So, but most of those bill drafts are already in or done. And so, we're going to, quite honestly, we're going to use a little bit of political capital by trying to come in this late in it. But I think that because of the situation that we have with our hydropower and the fact that we want to do this so that we can include all rural utilities in Nevada, I think that we'll have a decent shot. So, but I don't know which legislator we're going to ask to help with that yet. On Monday, the 24th, we will have Senator Jackie Rosen in-house visiting with Vernon and I. We are going to provide her with a system tour up in Moapa, and we will be discussing with her federal appropriation needs, infrastructure priorities, and the importance of continued federal support for hydropower. Senator Rosen has supported the legislation for both the Help Hoover Dam Act and the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, so we're going to take her up to Moapa and show her where we're going to use our grant funds that we got as a result of that IIJA funding. And we're going to welcome her to our service territory, and then we're going to talk to her about how are we going to get some more federal money so that we can do some more projects that we need to do. So I'm very much looking forward to that. Her staff reached out about also meeting with our neighbors, Moapa Valley Water District, and so I gave them their contact, and I spoke with Joe yesterday, and they also will be getting a meeting with the senator. So that is wonderful, and Joe and I have already primed what he's going to say and what I'm going to say. So that will be really good. I'm looking forward to that. It will be a very short meeting. They said that they would prefer that we all rode in one vehicle, and we will have state police in front of and behind us for that tour. But that's perfect for me, because once we got her in the truck, she got to listen to Vernon and I for the entire 45-minute drive. So that'll be perfect. The U.S. Department of Energy issued a draft National Transmission Needs Study back in July, and after reading 112 fun-filled pages of study, Vernon requested that we should submit some commentary. So I have given each of you a hard copy of the white paper that we did. That has been shared with Secretary Wright through that comment period. But we also have sent that to all of our congressional delegation. So we sent that to Catherine Cortez Masto, Jackie Rosen, Stephen Horsford, Mark Amaday, Susie Lee, and Dina Titus, as well as Clark County Commissioner Kirkpatrick, Assemblyman Patchett, and Governor Lombardo. So I think that First and foremost, we are incredibly lucky that Vernon keeps his finger on those things and has such good skills to say, to make me sound far smarter, like this is, like, what a bunch of crap. And then he puts this into a very eloquent way, and then I'm willing to sign it. So I'm thankful for Vernon. But I also think that one of the things that's happening when we're making federal decisions is that they're not hearing the voice of small rural electric that are being widely affected by this. It's easier for IOUs across the nation and large G&Ts to have a voice because they have the lobbying, but we normally don't. And so the only way that we're going to do that is the true grassroots, write letters, and get in front of our legislators. So I'm very thankful for Vernon for doing that. Okay, that concludes my presentation, unless I can answer any questions for you guys.
Hey,
this is Bob. I have a question. Well, first, are we going to talk about power purchase contracts sometime later?
That would be an executive session, Bob. Yes.
Okay, I'll just table this till then.
Okay.
I would like to say that's incredible that here we have senators talking to us.
In our territory.
In our territory. Nobody ever gave a darn about us before. And at the last NERC meeting, we had a senator. This is a huge step forward for us and for the smaller water utility, our water and power utilities that didn't even have a voice, and you guys have done an absolutely incredible job.
Thank you.
I think it is great.
So Vernon and I met with one of Rosen's local staffers based out of the Las Vegas office, and we took her to, we ate lunch with her, and then we took her on a tour, and she's just a delightful young lady. And I told her, now that you've opened this door, I'm just going to bug the hell out of you until you guys give us some money. And she smiled and said, okay. She has braces on her teeth even. She's so cute. she said, okay, we look forward to it. And I'm like, perfect. I want to, again, though, commend Vernon. This young woman that is on Rosen's staff came to a City of Mesquite event, and Vernon found out who she was, and he struck up a conversation with her. He then spotted her at a different event, and he once again tracked her down. And then we asked for a meeting, and she came and gave it to us. And the other staffer that is coming with Senator Rosen from D.C., McKenna, she and I have become friendly. She's out of the D.C. office. And I said, you should come here and let us take you on a tour and be back in Nevada for a little bit. She grew up in Reno, and I'll be danged if she isn't coming, and so she's going to be a part of that tour too. So it's so hard with those staffers because they change over regularly, but when you can get in and be friendly with them, they make all the difference. The senator's stopping for a visit with us, so.
They're the ones to do the job.
That's right. Senators. That's right. That's yes. All right, Mr. Chair, we're ready.
All right. Okay, we're down to item I, review and possible approval of OPD organizational policy for possible action.
We told the boys they only had to stay through the managers. I didn't.
I thought maybe we'd done that. We were done. Bad chance.
Can you put us back, or do I put us? Yes, thank you. So on this, where is my, can you put it on just my action item so sure. I can read that? Thank you. Thank you, Stephen. So this policy was last approved in 2013. One of the things that I wanted to talk about was some things that I wanted on the org chart. And so when I looked through this to see what policy requires for me to present changes to the org chart, I looked and saw that this was old and outdated. And so this is the red line of that. You can see that really on this policy, the only thing that I've changed is our very stereotypical added the title and changed it from the district to OPD5. So there's no substantial changes to this whatsoever. And then we just included with it a copy of the approved org chart that was done the last, this is the most recent approved org chart because the policy states that this, it will go hand in hand with it.
I move that we approve OPD.
Second.
By O'Toole.
Good.
Okay.
Praise the Lord. Okay. We have a motion, we have a second. Everyone in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Hold on, Bob. Bob, you're an aye, correct?
Aye.
Yeah, you said aye.
Thank you.
Yes.
All right, motion passes, very good. Item J, review and possible approval of 2026 org chart for possible action.
So I told you guys a few months ago that I would present to you a full succession plan. And I did that last meeting in the executive session. From that succession plan, I also did a risk assessment for our staff. And when I did that, I identified four positions that I believe need to be addressed. The first one is in substation operations and manager. I'm proposing that we add a position for a journeyman or at the minimum a fourth year substation tech. On the engineering services, you can see that we have an engineering support specialist, but if you look over on administrative services at the bottom, there is a yellow customer service that is vacant. Really what we're doing here is that Karina has worked in the customer service department for many years for us, but under Mendes' leadership, she was moved physically over to the engineering building. And so we then had some issues where if she wanted to have a day off, she was working in this building and answering to the engineers, but she was still on the org chart under customer service. So she essentially had two bosses. All I'm proposing is to physically move her on the org chart to engineering because that's where she's already residing, and we would not be replacing that customer service position.
So that is not a new position, really. It's just switching.
It is
so
just changing kind of where she is on the organization. Bob, can you mute your phone?
I don't think that's mine. My phone is already muted.
Okay, sorry, Bob. Can you see who that is? Whoever it was, they heard us and now they're embarrassed and they hit mute. So, okay, and then finally under the administrative services, we had two pieces that I feel are critical that we need to have a deeper bench for, and that is both human resources and cybersecurity or an IT administrator. So I've proposed both of those pieces on here. We talked about some of these risks in my succession plan in the executive session, but I'm happy to answer any questions tonight if any of you guys want further review. So my proposal is three new positions and just reorganizing one position that will not the yellow customer service position under administrative services will not be backfilled.
I have a question.
Okay.
In radio ads recently, I've heard about a company that provides you, for small companies, human resource services. You pay a monthly fee, and they're supposedly, you call them and are Zoom meetings with them. And since we have human resources, it works pretty good. I know she's been out for a while, but for at least a while, could we use something like that? We're a relatively small organization, and to have two people in human resources is a lot of staff for the resources. Could we use, do you think, something like that?
I think that's a great idea. For the application and the work that we're going to have this particular position fill, we could not use some kind of a temp service or an out service.
Oh.
But I do think that there are definitely pieces that I'm familiar with and I've seen success with, both in human resources and in payroll, that can be contracted out. But this particular role that we're looking at would not be able to be filled by an outside agency.
What What is that? I wasn't at the, I was unable to connect on that. Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that we're looking for is somebody that's going to do much more internal training, building of leadership and planning strategy, those higher executive level decision making for human resources.
So would this person work with Kelly?
Yes. Yes. But in a different capacity. Kelly's role will not change in human resources. This will be filling needs that aren't being met right now, in addition to being a backup for Kelly, or vice versa.
I understand strongly the backup for her is very important, mm-hmm. that you have someone. But a lot of training is just hired out, isn't it? I mean, we really don't have anybody in-house to do some of the training you're talking about.
Well, we have had internal training before, and we have not recently, and so that will be a part of it, but there would be other aspects of human resources that they would be doing too.
Further discussion on the org chart?
How soon would you be seeking to put these people on?
I'm going to ask for forgiveness since I didn't ask for permission on one little piece, Chad. When Brent left from the line crew and we were going to post his position, it didn't make sense to me to run an ad for a journeyman lineman or a fourth year and then 2 months later run for a substation. So I advertised for both of those on one ad with the hopes that within a year we could find somebody. It is not going to be an easy hire. For the IT and the human resources, I would like, if with you guys' approval, the reason that I'm asking for this is so that we can then fit that into our 27 budget. And so ideally, I would like to hire one at the first of the year and one mid-year 2027 to space that out a little bit. But we'll see if Jonathan will let me do it that soon or if he'll make me wait a few months.
And Melissa, on those jobs that they're a little more critical, hard to find, do we have any incentives for hiring? You know, I know a lot of companies, public safety does that quite a bit, where, you know, whether it's engineering, whether it's journeyman, whatever the case may be, if they are that hard to find, what's the enticement to have people apply?
Buy them a car.
Whatever it takes. Because I think you're losing valuable time with what not hiring them.
But not a Tesla.
Randy, we're seeing all different aspects. I know of utilities that are signing hiring bonuses, that is happening. We have not budgeted for that. What we hope is, honestly, I don't mean this flippantly at all. I genuinely believe that the Lord places people in the right place at the right time, and we have been so blessed. We're disappointed that Brent didn't work out. I think he would have been lovely. His wife lived here for 16 days before she decided that she and the children were moving back to
16 Phoenix. Days of 110 degree
above. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So well, not always, but I think, yeah.
Those positions are very difficult to find, and they're few and far between. Mm-hmm. I just don't know if somewhere down the road is something to take a look at, if it's mm-hmm. problematic going forward.
If you're unable to hire,
correct.
Say, sure. Yeah, 3 or 4 months from now, no.
Even 6 months, it's like we're just not getting our turnout that we thought.
Yeah.
You may have to up the ante a little bit.
But with that, you've got to have some guarantee.
Yeah, I was going to say, you have to explore all the pros and cons that go with that,
well,
too.
No, absolutely. And public safety, you come in, you get your bonus, you have to, you're required to stay for 3 years under contract.
For sure.
You know, you can do anything like that. I'm just saying, it's something to look at if it's that hard to get people.
Yeah.
We're still looking for a motion on item J.
I have one other question.
Oh, I'm sorry. IT tech.
That's right.
What's the deal with the IT tech?
So we have a number of retirements that are coming up throughout our org chart. One of the things that we have seen with when I did our risk assessment is that Stephen and Merlin are both extremely busy, and we do not have any backup for either one of them. And Stephen has been given, on top of all of his cybersecurity requirements, he's also been working on the WEC compliance with Randall and Eldon. And so what we're hoping to find is somebody with a lower experience level in IT that could come in and allow Stephen to focus more on the WEC and cybersecurity, and he could have somebody to help him with resetting a password, fixing the printer, going to the substations. I don't know all of the things, but Stephen has a laundry list of items that he could use help on. The other thing that I'm sorry if I'm telling something that I ought not to tell, but Stephen is working long hours and is extremely, extremely busy trying to keep up with cybersecurity, and what I don't want is for him to fall behind on that. It's the piece that we can't risk. And so I think that it's important that we have not only to deepen the bench there, but to also have security for us that should something happen to Stephen, there's another person there that even knows where to go or what the passwords are.
I'll make a motion that we approve.
I appreciate the looking into this and making sure we have a succession in place for those people and the depth of it. I'd make a motion that we accept this agenda item as presented.
I'll second it.
Oh, we have a motion. We have a second.
Exactly the way you would.
That's what I wrote.
Good job, Bob. Okay.
All in favor?
Further discussion? Everybody in favor, item J on the reorg chart, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Aye.
You won.
Thank you.
Then aye.
Thank you.
I got it.
All right. Item K, or review and possible approval of OPD security deposit situation.
Thank you. This is a unique one my staff brought to me, and so I will ask Jonathan to please contribute if I'm missing something. The proposed policy change, I'm going to read a piece of this because this is a little bit confusing as to why we're doing this change with the security deposits. The proposed policy change is intended to protect the financial interests of both parties when individuals associated with a joint account separate and a deposit refund is due. Under the current practice, a deposit may be transferred and applied to a future account of only one party. This practice may unintentionally favor one party by transferring jointly associated funds to an account solely benefiting that individual. The revised policy will require that when parties separate and a deposit is eligible for refund, the deposit be refunded to both parties rather than transferred to the future account of either individual. This change establishes a more equitable and consistent process for ensuring that the utility does not determine or presume ownership of the deposit between the separating parties. The proposed revision is intended to protect the interest of all parties, reduce the potential for disputes, and provide a clear and impartial process for handling deposit refunds in these circumstances. One of the situations that we face routinely now is that when two people cohabitate and then they split and she calls and says, turn off the power, I'm moving to my own apartment, I'll take the deposit with me. He's then left without the deposit even though maybe he was the one that paid it or vice versa. And so we're running into that. When a married couple splits, you have a divorce decree that works through some of those. When you have people who are cohabitating, there's no formal separation. And so what ends up happening then is that my customer service staff and billing department deal with those angry calls back and forth.
Are they both on the contract?
Yes. Yes. And so now what would happen, Chad, is that we would give the deposit back in both names, and whoever cashes it, they can fight that out. But we're not picking he gets the deposit or she gets the deposit. And so, and we did have Byron review this policy and give us this blue line version is the only change that we're making, with the exception of, if you look, there was still on this policy, it had the district in a few places, and so we just cleaned that up because we were already putting it before you. But the only substantial change is to the transfer of the deposit.
Okay. Discussion?
I have a question. Do we need to have both parties sign off on that or anything? Because I assume that some of those chips can be wrote as blank or and or blank, so either one of them could sign it. Or maybe have make so that both people have to sign the chip.
Do we have to say and or, Byron?
Well, or means either of them can sign it, right. And means both of them sign it. So if it's the intent to give it to both, we either need to write two checks, half to each.
Equally.
We don't want to do that.
Or put and they have to sign it. We add or, then we've defeated what we were trying to do. So we cannot add or. It's got to be and.
That's not...
So what are you going to do?
We'll just say and then both people have to sign it. Because really what we're trying to do here, Bob, is make them decide... make them decide who cashes the check or ultimately, I don't even care who cashes the check. What I care is that when they move, they have to come up with a new deposit and the deposit that we refunded went to them in the mail. So that we're not transferring that money to the next account and we're picking who gets the transfer. That's what I'm trying. I don't care who signs the check, honestly, because we've shipped it to the address. We send it to the address that we have on file. Yeah.
I have a question.
I think I understand that. I guess I was just wanted to make sure it was going to say and, so that both of them can, if it said or, then whoever gets the check can sign it.
But quite honestly, Bob, it's none of our business who signs it. Whoever endorses the check and deposits it is none of our business as long as it's one of those two names. What we care is that we don't say, I'm going to transfer that $250 credit to only one of those parties. Now Overton Power is making that decision. Once we've mailed the check, which one of them signs it and puts it in their account is not our business.
So how is the account originally set up? Is it set up so either of them have full power?
Yes.
If both names are on
the account. If both names are on the account, then they both have the ability to disconnect. But if one of them comes in and says, I have a $250 deposit on my account, I want to disconnect that and move that into my new apartment, well, the other person, we've just given their deposit to whoever came in and talked to us.
Okay, I think I understand.
The way the checks are issued now, it doesn't say and it doesn't say or. It has the primary account member's name, and then the second name is just under it, and then it's the address. And the check is pulled from the way the account is set up. So it doesn't say and it doesn't say or. It just has two names on it.
Yeah, so what's the...
So if it has to say and, then they're going to have to go in and edit the account.
But I don't think it has to say and. It's none of our business who checked it. Yeah.
Whoever that set the account up, that's up to them how they cash it.
Yeah, right.
It's not our... That's not
and if only one of them signs it and cashes, it's not our...
Direction and or, then it'll be up to the bank on how they want to...
Yeah.
Then they interpret whether, hey, there's two names, I'm going to require an and. They're basically based on and or. That'll be the bank's decision.
Okay.
Check
back.
Yep.
Security deposits.
100%. Yes.
You could decide this, Jonathan.
We wanted a policy because we were going back and forth of someone of this way, someone of that way, and they would come in, and we just wanted the policy.
I make a motion that we approve OPD 05203 security deposit policy.
Second. Okay, we have a motion, a second, and a further discussion.
That was Chad.
All right. Chad,
was that you, Deb?
Who was the second? Mike.
Mike, okay.
Everyone in favor of the proposal for the security deposit policy, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
No, wait just a moment.
Hold him back, Rich. Hold him back.
All right.
Slap his mouth.
Policy passes. Wonderful. Thank you. Okay. L, presentation of the Wage and Benefit Committee findings, possible approval. of longevity pay.
Nope.
Possible action.
Sorry.
Mr. Chair, if it is okay with you, I would like to present on both item L and M at the same time. Okay. We could have one discussion on both of those agenda items, but then we can handle the motions separately, individually. But the presentation would be on both.
I would not like that. I mean, both of these issues have some big discussion about them. I mean, and to have them sort of mix and match makes it much more confusing, at least in my mind. Why would you not discuss holidays and longevity pay? There are two separate items completely.
Yes, sir.
And
that's
you
fine.
You might approve one and not the other, but discussing together gets me a little confused on what the heck we're talking about.
Okay.
Sorry?
So the first one is longevity. So I'm going to skip through my presentation to...
Well, okay. You have to get to that part.
Okay. So at the beginning of 2025... the OPD-5 Wage and Benefit Committee was reorganized. I tasked them with reviewing all employee benefits and to bring forth suggestions for changes that they saw fit. This was guided by three core objectives: boosting employee morale, increasing long-term retention, and ensuring our compensation packages remain competitive with neighboring utilities. I've asked for the Wage and Benefit Committee to join us here tonight, and so I'm going to ask them to please introduce themselves so that you know who has worked on this process for us. So if you guys will stand up and introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Kim Watts. I've been with OPD5 for 8 years. Started off as a customer service rep and am now in the finance department as the accounting and payroll clerk.
I'm Shauna Marshall, and I've been with Overton Power for 26 years. Done a lot of different departments. Right now, I currently work in accounting. I do help with billing, and I do accounts payable, among other things.
Hi, Boyd Evans. I'm in the engineering department supervisor here in Mesquite. I've been here for close to 23 years now. And it's great to be here with you.
Scott Robson in the engineering department. I'm a staking engineer in the Wampa Valley area. I've been here for just over 6 years now.
I'm Shane Robinson. I'm the substation operations foreman. I cover substations in both valleys, and I've been with Overton Power for just under 9 years.
Okay. So one of the situations that we have had at OPD5 in the past, many years ago, was that we did say we had a committee, and we had a manager that went in and told the committee what they were going to do and how things should be, and then the committee said okay, and then she came to the board and said, this is what the wage committee wants. And so when I took over, that was one of the things that I felt very strongly that we were going to fix, that when the employees wanted to have a voice and wanted to ask management for things, that they had the ability to do that, absent of any managers, you know, saying, no, we're not going to do this, or no, we're not going to do that. And so I tasked them with a big undertaking. Look at the policies and look at our benefits and say, where do we rank with our neighbors, both locally and within our industry, statewide, but next door in Utah, all of northern Nevada. And then ultimately, each one of them represents a group within our company. And the reason that we did this was that some of them work inside, some work outside, some have very young kids, some are near retirement. We tried to have a very good cross-section of what is it that people are looking for, because when you're 20, you look at benefits differently than when you're 60. And so we wanted to make sure that everybody had a voice. One of the things that the committee came up with to ensure that what they were hearing from the employees aligned was that we did an anonymous company-wide survey. And so that survey was conducted, And they came back and reviewed all of what everybody responded. We had wonderful response from our employees as far as taking the survey. And the overarching theme was that our employees are happy, that our morale is good, they're happy with the wage, they're happy with the benefits that they receive. But there were a few items that they felt like rose to the top of asks from our employees. And the two main were that employees felt like that we should have some kind of a longevity plan or benefit. And the second was that we should look at taking on a couple more holidays. And so we'll talk about longevity pay first. I want to say that once they got the initial survey back, this group worked hard on analyzing that, looking over policies, seeing what they could do. And then they went back and sent out a second survey to say, what would you like on for a longevity package? What do you think is fair to you and your family, and yet what keeps the company whole? How do we ensure that Overton Power is taken care of as well as the employees and what they're asking for? So on the longevity pay, I'm sorry, I planned on presenting this backwards, so.
We could do the reverse.
Employees have asked for a $100 payment per year starting in on their anniversary after the completion of their fifth year. So employees with five or more years of continuous service with OPD5 will receive an annual retention payment of $100 for each completed year of service. Eligibility begins upon the completion of their fifth year. So one of the things that they went out and did was they took a survey of 16 neighboring entities. And again, that is local government entities here in our communities in both Virgin and Moapa Valley, as well as neighboring entities that are power companies surrounding us. So not all governmental entities out in Utah or California, anything like that, just our normal entities that we are very close with and who we're competing with for employees. Of those 16, there were six entities that have, and we're going to use the word retention and those interchangeably because it's the same thing. We originally thought that if we called it retention pay instead of longevity pay, that maybe we wouldn't have to pay PERS on it and that would be a savings, but that's not the case. And so retention and longevity are the same thing. We have one entity that offers retention and gifts or safety bonus. Two entities had gifts or safety bonus only. One entity had merit pay that was annually reviewed. One entity had merit and gift or safety bonuses. And then five entities had no retention, merit, or safety bonus offered. I'm sorry. I got to get to my slide here. Now, one of the things that I think is also important to look at is the size of the bonuses that are given in comparison with the longevity pay. Like we have a neighboring IOU that does not give longevity pay, but their safety bonus is up to 2% of your annual salary each year. And so that's far more sizable than somebody who's going to get a $600 check for having worked here for 6 years. So it's very convoluted for them to put all of that information up for you, but there's a difference. Just because it doesn't say that they have a retention pay doesn't mean that the people aren't getting bonus. There's some kind of a benefit there, yes. And so the next slide that they have just gave, it's a little bit clearer so that you can see how many of those were offered. Stephen, could you please open the other presentation that I had out? This is the...
Is this one?
No, there in the swag folder sure. Was a...
Is it in the agenda items folder?
In the agenda item.
Does the chart show also none?
Go to the...
Some agency, the number giving none.
There were five.
Oh, was it? I didn't see them.
Who's on the...
I said it was on the right there.
Agenda item.
Ah, gotcha.
26.
Five.
And it's that one.
This one?
No, I saved it out there today. I'm sorry, I should have checked to make sure that we had the right one open. It's maybe, no, it's a PowerPoint presentation, so it's probably...
That one.
There we go. I didn't see that one.
My apologies, I should have checked that.
Which word do you want me to get you back to?
I want you to go down towards the bottom a little bit more. How about that one right there?
This one?
Actually, let's go to the slide 14. For this, there is a budgetary impact that I want to make sure you guys very fully understand the impact of what's being asked. For 2027, that is anticipated to be $97,707, and that includes having to pay retirement on that longevity pay. As you can see by this, it is going, we anticipate that this is going to increase because as people stay for longer, the more people who are getting the longevity pay, not only does their pay grow, but we will have a middle period of their career where more people are receiving that than people are retiring off. That's part of the point of longevity pay, right, is that we want to keep people. So I think that the piece that I want to make sure that you guys take from me is that longevity pay is ultimately about retention, recognition, and continuity. It provides tangible recognition for employees who have dedicated significant portions of their career to OPD5. It helps us retain valuable institutional knowledge, and it demonstrates that long-term commitment to the district has value. I think that one of the pieces with this is we have a number of people that when you come in for those first few years, you're on step schedules as you're learning the skills that you need for your job. And once you reach the four to 5 year mark, you've now topped out, you've reached all of those, you should have reached all of those milestones, and you're making that the pay that is commensurate with what you are responsible for. Now, we have certain employees that want to go above and beyond that. They want to go get more education, they want to take leadership classes, and they want to move to the supervisory level, management level, ultimately the general manager level. The problem is that with only 60 employees, the movement of those and the ability for those positions to come available are not readily available for a lot of people. So you may have somebody, I'll speak for myself, my movement throughout our company was in 10-year increments. I was in the same position for 5 years. I became a supervisor. I then was that position for 10 years. I then moved up to the next 10 years. And so you have a long time that you've been topped out and you're really only working for cost of living increases. And so this longevity pay, really what it does is it says we're rewarding you for the institutional knowledge that you have gained in that position, and we're hoping that you're going to stay and use that institutional knowledge within our organization for what we hope is 30 years or more. And so I am in favor of our employees. I'm proud of the group, of what they've asked for, the work that they've done on this. They did not take this lightly. They are very, very aware of the budgetary implications for this. And we went through a few iterations of what it was that they wanted to ask for, and they went back to their group. Like I told you, we started working on this in 2025. We've just now come to a consensus on how they feel that this should go and what they felt comfortable bringing to you. And so I'm happy to answer any questions that I can. And if I can't, that's why I made them come. So,
is there any ability for merit or performance measurement? How do you have an A employee and you have a B employee?
Yes, sir.
How do you do that?
So we have that, there's a multitude of ways. The first one would be, as you're learning your skill, developing your skill, we would be mentoring you a lot through that, and you would be on a step schedule that would meet, once you meet this, then you get a merit increase. Once you meet the next step, you get a merit increase. The other piece would be, if you've topped out, say you've reached all of those skill level, and now you're just working at a certain level, if you want to improve yourself, then you could get further education, and that could be college, it could be industry classes, it could be leadership classes, and you work towards that, and then you take on more responsibility, then you move to a different position that has more responsibility, and you go through merit that way. There's not always those positions for people to move to, though, and that doesn't mean that they just only want to be a worker bee. It just means that there are many times that I plan on working here far longer than 30 years, so the position isn't going to come available for a long time, and so that's one of the reasons that people would like to see some longevity pay.
Thank you.
We give a holiday bonus, don't we? No? At Christmas or something?
We give a Christmas bonus, yes.
So we do give a reward in addition to pay to everybody.
Yes, they get...
is it graduated or is it the same essentially?
Same for everybody.
Okay. From my experience, it seems to me that employees at 5 years, they're still kind of in a transition in their career even, whether they stay, move, marry, leave, whatever happens, that seems pretty premature to me. And I notice that some companies hold off a little bit longer in offering any kind of, they still eventually get the money, but the fact is they don't get it as early as 5 years, because in a lot of ways, you know, there's a lot of employees that are marginal at 5 years, mm-hmm. and some that, you know, you're rewarding very quickly. And that just seems pretty low to me, and I notice that some of the agencies give it, start it later, and then some give it at a milestone, like at 20 years you get a big bonus, and then you don't get anything until you're 25 mm-hmm. or something. That seems possible, but I think the yearly bonus is okay, but I think starting 5 years is way, way too early, in my opinion. Okay, other discussion? Points?
To me, I don't see this as a longevity bonus. I just see it as a bonus.
Help me understand that, Rich.
I don't think we have people leaving. I looked out on the wall. We have 38 people with over 5 years of experience. You know, one over 30, four over 20. I have all the numbers right here. So we just don't have people leaving. And I think it's, we want to retain that knowledge, but I think I would rather see a more at 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, instead of a yearly bonus. Because then it's just, I get that every year. And it's just every year I get a bonus. Mm-hmm.
It's more like sticking it out to the next bonus. So you're working towards a benchmark.
A benchmark bonus. And, you know, and I've kind of ran through this since, you know, you sent out that presentation, looked at those numbers. Mm-hmm. And... I would feel comfortable because we're talking, say, for a five-year employee, 500, 600, 700, 800, 900. And I'm comfortable with the five. But instead of 500 every year, it's the 500 per year, and then 1,000 for every one of those years, for every time. So 5 years, 1,500. 10 years, 2,000. And we make it a little stronger at those benchmarks, but it's not every year.
I think that would be that would be a far larger budget implication at 5 years, right? And then at 10.
But you look at it, instead of paying every year, you're just paying it at 5 and then at 10 and then at 15.
It accumulates.
I looked at the numbers and you're going to pay less than half of that. This is $560,000 we paid out over 5 years for longevity.
Mm-hmm.
And
does it start at $100 at year 5?
$500.
So it's $100 per year, but you don't start getting it until you've completed your fifth year. And I can...
Okay.
Do you want me to go back for you?
Hmm.
Yes.
So, can I ask some questions?
Yes.
So, I got a question for both of you. For one, Rich, are you saying to only do... you get less amount, but after, say... At the 10, so at the 5 year period, you get 500.
1500.
At the
10 year.
10 year, you get
15.
Start out more at 5.
2500.
Oh, you start out
start at more at 5.
Start at more at 5.
Start at more, so you get 1500, then 2000.
It makes it a much more incentive to stay for that time frame. To me, every year is just a salary bonus.
Yeah.
So your suggestion is 5 years, 1,500, 10 years, 2,000, 15, 2,500. What about those of us that go to 40, Rich? Help me.
What I said is because everyone is eligible for retirement at 29. I felt like at 30, we're gonna end at 30. There's really
the bonus.
So it's actually 33 and a third that you have to work for PERS now.
For the new employees?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have
after
to work for
the new employees.
Uh-huh.
Okay. As of when? I don't know when that.
Since
2015.
What day was that?
2015.
I was a 79 hire. So I remember.
But you got to get 90% of your PERS, and the rest of us get 75. So.
And it... To me, it's much more, a yearly is just every year, I get a bonus every year. This is an actual benchmark, retention. Now, in my mind, this is just Richard talking here. You know, we have employees that have got 30 years, 25 years, 20 years. So how do we compensate that?
It would start in 2027 with the budget. If when we go through the budget, it would begin in 2027. We would not back pay anybody.
Okay.
You would pay them for their anniversary at that date. I mean, if they had 26 years in, they would get a payment of $2,600 that year.
Well, it depends. If you do Richard's thing, then...
Well, they got to go to 25, 30,
Oh,
35.
If you do the golden egg sort of every 5 years or something.
But, yeah, so in that case... If in 2027 somebody's on their 26th year, they missed their 25-year anniversary bonus.
Or we could back pay them for that, the immediate past one. So if you have 17 years, you would get the 15-year payoff. But then you'd have to wait to 20 to get the next one.
What I'd like to do is see those numbers. You know,
okay.
Because to me, that's much more of a merit-based. Every year, and I like Mike's suggestion so that someone that just had 16 years, they don't have to wait for. Let's see what everybody gets a payment
on the back.
Wherever they're on the back pay.
Yeah,
and that kind of gives us a starting point, and then I'd like to see those numbers.
It's going to impact the budget quite a bit more.
Yeah, that's a larger
first year
is going to be a lot bigger cash outlay.
But let's look at it over the long term. Over run it out for 5 years or 10 years during that time.
Well, I can tell you that in my current place that I work at, we do something very similar. And part of it
to which?
Excuse me.
Similar to which?
The $100 per year starting for 5 years and carrying on. And part of that is we have a lot of employees that are topped out. That don't have a lot of movement in space, whether the job's not available, you know, until somebody retires or moves on, or whatever the case may be. And so some of this, does apply to those people that only get that percent and a half or 2%. And instead of getting that 6 or 7% like other employees, they'll get a 2%. And this does help a little bit fill that gap. And that's part of that reason why we developed that years ago. And it's not so much, you can call it retention, you can call it bonus, you can call it whatever you want. But those people that are in those positions that are not having space to move because our organizations are slightly smaller, you know, they're kind of getting left out a little bit. And that's how we've kind of developed that within where we work. And it's very identical to what this is here. It's easier to track. You're not worrying about if you're going to stay 5 years or 5 years or 6 months or whatever all that is. But it's a continual progression after 5 years or 6 years or 7 years or 8 years, whatever that looks like. And you can cap it at 30 if that's what Rich is asking, or 33 for their retirement age. But at the same time, I kind of look at it differently on the fact that if you have X amount of employees, say there's 6 or 8 or 10 or whatever that are topped out in those positions, you know, that's a hard thing to swallow. When everybody else is getting a raise, they're getting 2%, everybody else is getting 5% just because they're maxed out. This kind of helps fill that gap a little bit. And that's kind of how we spoke about this years ago. It's not a ton of money comparative to 5, 10, 15, 20 years and back pay. That's a lot more money coming out on the budget. I think starting out at 5 years at $500 and increasing that of $100 going forward, I don't think that's too much to ask. And, you know, you look at Garth Kane here, they do the 5-year milestone of 5 and 10 and 15 and so forth. But the monetary value is not quite as high as what Rich is explaining. And so it depends on how you want to shake it. But there again, when you get topped out of those positions and you have not a lot of space to move, this does kind of help bridge that gap, you know, going forward. It may not be a ton, but it's something. And that's kind of how I see that. So I kind of like the thing that's been brought forth by the committee. I'm kind of in favor of that. And it's just a progression plan as you go over the course of years. Not so much of holding you to the fire of 5, 10, 20, 30 years. To Rich's point, we don't have a lot of people leave, so why do that? Why would you do that?
Can you help me understand how Rich's plan is more expensive? It seems to me like it's the same, except in his plan, you only get paid once every five years.
I think
what, and I haven't run, I didn't, I, this is my first time hearing Richard's idea, so I haven't looked at it, but what I would say is the initial year's cash outlay would be larger, but long term I believe that Richard's idea would be
much cheaper.
Yes.
It's just 19 years and they leave just before the bonus, they don't get it.
Yeah.
Well, even if,
and so you save 5 years, 4 years of bonus that you would have paid them every year.
I have a situation that I'm 27 years in.
Yeah.
I'm a year and a half away from being 60. I can retire at 60 in a year and a half. What's my incentive to stay? Mm-hmm. If I don't get a bonus.
Yeah. But what?
Retention.
Okay.
At 30, you get a retention bonus.
Yeah. You don't want to stay to get it, then you leave, I guess, huh?
I guess.
How does that affect your retirement, though, if you get a bonus every 5 years? Isn't the retirement based on a 3-year average pay, or is it based on 3 years highest?
Three highest years average.
Highest out of the last 3 years you worked?
No. Okay. Average.
So that would work out. That would encourage people to stay for the bonus, because that would be the last year.
Slightly.
Theoretically. Okay.
What time frame were you talking about when you said 5 years? You
thought I think 5 10. Years is way too little.
Let's start at 10 or something.
10.
I would want to start minimum. I would personally, I would probably think 20, but I think reasonably for people, 10 years is the minimum I would even think consideration of, because until an employee is there 10 years, when you think about your career and stuff, they're starting to really commit to, and they begin to give ideas to improve, and they really begin to mentor other people. But up to that time, it's just a job. They're showing up and getting the money in. So I would think 10 years start and would be a good thing. But you still accumulated the money for the years you worked. but it doesn't start till we make sure you're going to stay a while. And lots of people are transitioning in their first few years. A lot of us have changed jobs over the career, and especially the first years you get a job.
I think 10 years is too long. You look here on some of these charts, and there's four or five companies that started the five-year mark. You know, I think 10 years is quite a ways out.
Yeah, I think 5 years
is too far. 5 years seems to be a happy medium, I think.
It's not a happy medium. Medium is in the middle.
Seven and a half. Attracting new people to come in.
Yeah, that's where my mind goes, is I have openings trying to steal from those companies that you're looking at there. I need a benefit package that's incentivizing to them. So,
well, that's what we talked about.
And Kyle, comparison. When you posted your positions, has that been a month and a half?
Yeah. About.
How many applications do you have on your desk?
We have three on
and
the desk.
And are any of them qualified?
They're qualified, yes, but they have major red flags to it. They're not local. They're not.
So what do you think would be the benefit there? To have a little bit of a kicker every year that builds? Or wait 5,
a strong
wait
benefit
10,
package.
Wait 15? To me, that's just too far apart.
Yeah, we need a benefit package that's going to incentivize them to come immediately. Just like you talked about.
You have to wait that 5 or 10 or 15-year mark to get this $2,000 or whatever that is. To me, that's a forever and a day.
For sure. And I need to fill a seat today. Yeah. And if they decide to leave in 3 years because they're going to go back home, there's finally an opening, that fills a seat for 3 years. So it incentivizes them for 3 years to get all of the benefit of Overton Power District to that point.
That $1,500
fills a seat, gains experience for our staff.
And so I'm coming back to the original, you know, proposal is simply the start of the five, the $100 moving forward. I think it gets those people at the five-year mark vested in not even into PERS, but into this little program.
Yeah.
And then those people that are topped out that have a little bit of benefit within those years in between that. And I think that's more than fair.
Well, we've got, go ahead, Mr.
I was going to make one comment on Rich's plan. So we're trying to build morale, right? So on Rich's plan, say it starts at 10 years. Let's say we have a 9-year employee. You said, well, we'd retro that person that first year. And whatever they're closest to. So you'd move a 9-year up to a 10-year, or would you move 9-year back to a 5-year?
He's asking for a friend.
What I'm saying is, at a 9-year, you move back to a 5-year, you say, well, you're too far past your first level.
Well, you wouldn't even get anything until 10 years.
You wouldn't get anything, but...
You wouldn't get
a
bonus until
you're 10. There's going to be a lot of anxiety.
My plan is to go back for the 5-year, he'd get that benefit, and then a 10-year, he gets the
benefit.
So
that person could get two in a row, a 5-year and a 10-year.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that benefit that person. But a 6-year employee would get
but an 11-year, yeah, 11-year would be the difference, yeah.
Crazy.
I'm just saying there's
creating a struggle for us.
That's what we want to do.
Well, and also it seems to me that trending these days, the youth that, you know, that you attract are not sticking to jobs. They're very flighty, is the word I use for it, is they're quick to quit a job, and this would be a way to incentivize them to maybe want to stay. Because when I hired on at Overton Power, this was my forever job. And people don't think like that anymore.
No, most young people change jobs 5 or 6 times these days.
So,
do you think the gap
of turnover problem?
Do you think the gap of the 5 or 10 or 15 years is more prevalent?
You have one guy from Phoenix, for instance, but it's mainly people don't like the environment. I think, but we've had
some
big turnover.
In this year, we've had two: a person from our customer service leave, a person from our finance department leave.
And then, yes.
But they still left.
Fantastic employees.
But that's the idea
qualified.
That they're going to leave you anyway.
Heavy hitters for
and
us.
And then we had a journeyman lineman leave, and now we just had a third year leave. So.
Yeah.
Well, we have kind of. How about. Since we're not talking about doing it, not doing it until the first year, I think we've come up with a lot of ideas. Maybe we ought to just table it for this meeting and come back and do a little thinking about it. A couple of figures that we can come back and consider it at the next meeting and table it for this one.
I think per this proposal, per Rich's idea, you run those numbers and coming back to Ozaki, it's like, okay, do you do the 11th, the 9th? That's neat. That has to be added in there, or how do you do the math? So that needs to be touched up.
Well, so maybe it's good to table it for the next board meeting.
It's not we're rejecting it. It's just, hey, we need a little more numbers. And I think for a lot of, we have a lot of discussion here. And you're thinking of ideas and then you're improving your thought process and go, you know, that Mike had a heck of a good idea. Yeah. Or Rich has a good idea, whatever it is. And you begin to say, hey, we could do it this way. You know what I mean?
And I think coming back to Randall's point was, it's you know, you look at a monetary value, right? But you also look at it to a morale thing. You know, what does that get impact is, and I don't know which is right or wrong necessarily, but is it the yearly thing that keeps morale slightly higher? Is it the 5-year gap, 10-year gap, 15-year gap? Which one, I mean, if it's the money that is not that far apart, what's the impact on the morale for daily staff to get that check in November for Christmas? Maybe it's $600, $700, $800, whatever. You know, I think you need to think about that too. We get ours in November. And so for some of these people that are starting out at the 5-year gap, that don't get a raise because they are topped out, it doesn't seem like a lot of money maybe to you or us, but it is for them. And that could be a huge morale booster for a number of people. And I think you have to look at that, not just a number. So I think the morale issue is a big deal.
Hey, this is Bob. I'm not against tabling it or, you know, hearing other ideas, but we have looked at what other companies do. And most of the other companies do what was proposed. So, you know, like, I assume they did research also and kind of figured out what worked. Just something to keep in mind as we decide whether we're going to adopt what was presented or if we want to look at new ideas. It has got a lot of thought already.
I think there was a mix of both, weren't they? Benchmark and yearly.
Yeah.
I just want to say that I think that when I tell you that this group started in 2025, it takes time to put together a survey, come up with questions. What do they want to know? They went through many, many meetings. This group has met multiple times in the last year and a half, and they've rehashed all of these. I don't know. I'm not going to put them on the spot and ask it what was their deciding factor on why not to go with the 5, 10, and 15-year marks, because they did discuss that.
Well, we asked them.
But I think what I asked them to do was to come up with the objective was boost morale, increase long-term retention, and ensure that our compensation packages remain competitive with all of our neighboring utilities. The committee has done that. I have no problem with tabling it and coming up with some other ideas. I just want to say I feel like they fleshed out a ton of ideas. They came up with this, and this is why they came to, this is what they came up with, and they went back to the employees and spoke with them, and this is what the employees were in favor of too.
And that's why I think we should consider just going ahead with it, taking a vote on it.
And so, Mr. Chairman, you'll just call for a motion, and then someone will make either a motion to approve as presented, or someone will, and you vote on it, and it may win, it may not, or someone's going to make a motion to
table it
for next month and instruct the management to provide additional numbers, and you'll vote on that, and it'll either be approved or not.
All right. Let's do that. I would like to respond to you, though, is that what the employees want and what management said. But we're the board and we're representing the customers on this side of the thing. And so we have to consider the value, not necessarily for the employees, we think of them, but we have another side behind us, which are the people who are going to pay the bill. And does it accomplish something for the money? So
we're keenly aware. Our staff... that was something that
they... I just want to make sure that when it said that the employees want this, well, yeah, employees always would like something, and we would like to give them, if we get value for it, for the customer. That's all.
I think you can't speak more if it's high morale
one other...
or slow morale. I don't care what anybody says. I think it comes
there's
back
one
to...
Other...
Bob?
Go ahead, Bob.
One other thing that hasn't been brought up yet is that $100. You know, if we're going to vote on something, and you're nervous about the money, it could be a lesser amount also.
That amount, Mr. Jones, that you proposed, would, like if you started at 5 and went 10, then 15 would be a total of $6,000? Is that what you're saying, 1,500, then 2,025? As opposed to what staff proposed during that same period, $100 starting every 5 years, or yeah, after 5 years would be 18,000. That's a 6,000, not including, not figuring in the retro stuff. Mm-hmm. So.
I need to see that.
So yours would be a third less, but.
A third.
Yeah.
Outside of the first year.
Yeah, yeah, not including the first year. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I think we've kicked it around enough. Let's go for a motion.
I'll make a motion we table it till the next meeting and get some numbers back from the staff and think about it ourselves for a little bit to consider our side of the thing and represent it, because although they've said it for a year now and worked hard on it and done a good job.
You don't need to explain.
We've got
it. You only need a motion.
We've only okay.
3 days.
You don't want the explanation.
We have a motion. We have a motion for table.
I'll second that motion.
We have a second. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed?
Can we raise hands? Bob, are you a nay?
Of a nay or yes or no?
Sorry, yeah, I'll be a nay. I'm a nay.
Three. What do you say? A?
Nay.
Nay. Nay. Okay.
So did it pass or?
Three A, four nay.
Four nay?
If I count it right.
Raise your hand, your hands for aye, for yes.
Aye.
Oh, aye. Aye. One, two.
You're a nay.
To table it.
To table it.
To table it.
Yeah.
She said aye. Yeah, raise your hand if you want to table it, if you're asking to table it.
Okay, okay. One, two, three, four, five.
Okay,
table.
Two. Okay, it's table.
Can you count it, Bob says?
I got, yeah, I okay. Kind of got.
We're not rejecting it, though. We're just.
No, it's tabled until next month.
Okay, so the motion passes to table it for next board meeting.
Do we need direction on what the request is?
I think their direction is what they wanted was on Richard's proposal. So is there any other direction to give?
I think it's just that compared to the proposal.
Well, can I have your vote?
I think Jonathan,
can we see a table of what the costs are with Richard and with the other, the original plan?
Yeah, we will put it on the agenda for next month and bring that information back to you, the comparisons.
Perfect.
Thank
sounds
you.
Great. Thank you. That.
All right.
And can I just talk to Jonathan for a moment? Hey, can we, when we do this, what are we going to go to 30 year or 35 year? Because you said it was 33 years now for the PERS.
You
better
go to 35.
So we got to go to 35 years.
I think so.
Huh? Okay. So at least 35. 35. Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's go to item M, presentation for holiday policy.
This same committee, the second piece of the survey that they looked at was that employees were in favor of taking on two additional holidays, two additional paid holidays. After that original survey went out, they then sent out the second survey that asked about the longevity pay, but also for direction on the holidays of what was that people were looking for. Overwhelmingly, people were asking for Christmas Eve, December 24th, to be a holiday. The other thing that they came up with as they went back and forth, because the rest were kind of mixed, was that if they did a floating holiday, the floating holiday then could be observed if somebody wanted to observe Martin Luther King, Columbus Day, or Juneteenth. None of those holidays are observed by Overton Power, and this would allow them to use that holiday on that day so that they could be in observation of it. it is not limited to just those three. They could use that holiday for a different, if it's their wife's birthday, if it's their birthday, something. So in this proposal that we received from the staff, there is no budget implication to having two holidays. There is efficiency implication, though. That is 2 days that we would be treating as a holiday. Now, what I would say is it would not be the same for the floating holiday as it would be a normal holiday, in that our customers would be of little impact because our office would not be closed. And so that's very comparable to an employee taking a vacation day. There may be a small piece of impact to customers, but the office would still be open. The second one, when we talk about efficiency, is Christmas Eve. For 26 years, I've wanted this to be a holiday at Overton Power. I believe very strongly that when I go out and those young moms that are working on the front counter on Christmas Eve and we're waiting on next to nobody, it's hard for me. I would far rather them be home with their kids on Christmas Eve, planning Christmas dinner and prepping for Santa's arrival. So, and young men too. I'm not trying to discriminate. I know you guys want to be home too. But last year, for the first time in my career, I worked in the mesquite office on Christmas Eve. And we had about a 2.5 hour period of utter silence. And so I went and asked Felicia on the front counter if they would take a tick mark of how many customers customer service waited on Christmas Eve. Eight customers. So when I say that we would lose efficiency because we would close the office, I think it would be minimal efficiency lost on Christmas Eve. And so I am in full support of issuing both of those, of asking you guys to approve the two additional holidays. And the committee did go through those same 16 entities and do a comparison of what is offered. You can see that there's one that has 14, a few that have 13, most have 12, 11, Overton Power is in the 10, and then we have one entity that has 9. And I'm happy to answer any questions or give any other color.
Okay, that's a good one. Christmas Eve is a very special day, like the day after Thanksgiving. It's not a date, it is a day that you're celebrating just before Christmas. Well, what happens if it falls on a Saturday or Sunday? Then the people are off already. Mm-hmm. So would it be a good idea to say, okay, if Christmas Eve falls on a working day, we're closed. But if it falls on the weekend, another day isn't given in that place, because it does, you're giving it for a specific reason here. Then you have the other side of it. There are a number of people who are not Christian, and they would like their holiday. You know what I mean? So that's it's a tussle there. But it just seems to me that if you're giving it because it is Christmas Eve, that it ought to happen on Christmas Eve, and if it's not on a work day, then so what? If it's on Saturday or Sunday, they don't get another day to pick a, you know, like a Friday off or a Monday or some crazy stuff.
This policy does take that into account and actually does that.
Does it?
At the bottom of the policy, it says when any of these holidays falls on Saturday, the Friday preceding shall be observed as the holiday. And when the holiday falls on a Sunday, the Monday following shall be observed as the holiday.
Yeah, that's what I'm objecting
to. Well, you're objecting.
Yes, that if Christmas Eve falls on a Saturday, why would you get Friday off too? I mean, you're getting it off because it is a specific day in like history or something.
All the government in Nevada does it that way, just so you know.
I don't care about
that. I know, I'm just telling you.
I don't care about us. But anyway, it's just
I have to give that. I have to do that too in my law office, because I made the policy that we're off when the courts take holiday, and the courts now are doing that policy. So.
But
what I mean, you guys have. You guys can do whatever you want.
Yeah, it doesn't serve the purpose if you give a Friday off
if it happens to fall on Saturday or Monday or whatever the heck, you have to move around. Because already on Christmas, we give, if it falls on a weekend, we give the day before off, don't we?
Depend. Yes, we do.
If it falls on Sunday, if you give Monday off.
We offer 10 holidays. And regardless of where the holiday falls,
right,
our employees get to have the benefit of the 10 holidays.
Yes. In this particular case, what I was suggesting was that you would not get always get it because of the calendar.
So we would say, I'm not arguing. I'm making sure I understand.
No.
You're saying if you gave the floating holiday, then we would have 11 holidays on the years that Christmas Eve falls on the weekend.
Yes.
And on the years that it's on the weekday, we get 12 holidays.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's essentially the idea.
Okay.
Okay, further discussion?
Well, I'm not on the same page as Mike. There again, where I work is, we do with the contract, basically the proposal states is a Friday and a Monday, depending on where the holiday lands. I mean, you're going to do every 10 years, we're going to change holidays or whatever the hell that comes. That seems a little silly to me. Secondly, the floating holiday I'm not a fan of. We did that where I currently work. It was a little bit hard to track. Employees are doing this, employees are doing that. I would rather just pick another federal holiday and stick with the federal statute of what those holidays are. I'm not opposed to two more holidays. I would rather have it more substantiated if it's June 13th or Martin Luther King and Christmas Eve versus the floating holiday. Just because it's hard to track. We had some problems where I worked for that same thing. Oh, I thought I'd use that already. Or, you know, you already used it. And then you got into a little bit of the spice there. The other comment that I'd like to make is, this comes back to another morale issue for me. You know, we're going to sit here and dictate, one year you get a vacation year, the next year you don't. I mean, really? That's what we're doing? I don't understand that at all. It's about a morale issue on both counts, whether it's longevity or whether it's holiday pay. Open Power is a great place to work. I think we all know that. That doesn't mean we can't touch it up and make it slightly better or more convenient for families. Coming back to Melissa's point, Christmas Eve. You know, fine, don't call it Christmas Eve. Call it whatever you want.
December 24th.
December 24th. But at the same time, we all know that very little business is done on that, but yet families are doing family items. So why not contribute through Open Power and take care of a slight morale issue to help that program out? It's not that hard. I would propose that we stick with that December 24th, but go to either Martin Luther King or Juneteenth and keep it systematic every year with other court systems, you know, as Byron says, or other government entities, and keep it the same. So that would be my direction.
Okay. Got a couple of different ideas here.
Let me ask you guys that are... I'm more in favor of the floating holiday because then it gives you the option. Like Mike said, you may not be a Christian. I may be a Jew or a Muslim and want to take a specific day off.
That's not what this is about, though.
No, but the floating holiday gives you that option. I'm asking them, is tracking that an issue? You just put a code for that floating holiday, and when the employee puts it in their time, that code tracks it, doesn't it? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we did talk with this, and thankfully, on our wage and benefit committee is our payroll clerk. And so we said, you realize that when you make this decision, you're the person who will then be ensuring. And she felt confident that our software could make that very easy to do. And managers, of course, we have to manage the time of our staff. And Randy, I do understand what you're saying. I do think there could be a tracking issue there, but I think that one of the things when we put this committee together that they took really seriously was, how do we do what is best for the employees and the most fair to Overton Power? And part of the mindset with the floating holiday is then the office would still be open. And so that was their idea of, how do we ensure that the customers are the least impacted but still gain a day? That's where that really came from.
Fair enough.
Okay, and if I could make a comment, you could call it differently. You could just say, you got Christmas season, then everybody gets an extra, you could say, well, let's just adjust the vacation policy and everybody gets an extra day And vacation.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't really care one way or the other. For tracking purposes, stay with a federal holiday. That's all I care about. If you want to call it a floating holiday, it doesn't matter to me. I just want to make sure that if we're at 10 holidays and the majority is 12, 13, 14 holidays, let's try to keep up with everybody else. That's kind of my point.
Okay.
One more point. The other issue I had was I would have liked to seen holiday hours instead of days from the committee, and maybe you looked at that. We got 14, 12, 10, the 11, one of these was Nevada Power. I spoke with my son extensively on this. He works for Nevada Power. And I asked him, he indicated they had 10 holiday days and 2 floating days, so a total of 12 days. But those are 8-hour days, so they get a total of 96 holiday hours. We presently have 10 holidays for 100 holiday hours.
We do.
I'm trying to find my list.
Yeah. We work,
Scott Robison, can you speak to that? Because I know that you did research on that.
Yeah, and so we would actually be above, if those were 8-hour days, at 12 and a half days.
Scott, will you answer that?
Absolutely. And we did look into that, and we had NV Energy, the example you gave, does have differentiation depending on departments, because we've had others that have family members work there out in the field that are working 410s and other shifts. And I don't know their inner workings on how they separate those two, but they were the only entity with 8 hours, 5/8. We had 3 that were on 4/9s, so every other.
The 9/9s,
yeah. And then we had 12 that were on 410s. So those numbers, 12 of those ones do work 410s.
Mm-hmm.
And of that, you're right, the 11 hour was the MDE, and then another one was at 13. So even the 9/9s, they were getting 13 days. And then the other one was on the hour basis. Right? Mm-hmm.
So that's probably about right. Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
I spoke with Randy, and they have a mix in Mesquite here of 8-hour people and 10-hour people. Mm-hmm. And it depends on your shift. If you're a 10-hour employee, you get 10 hours of holiday. If you're an 8-hour, you get 8 hours of holiday.
That's correct. And it just depends on how your schedule plays out for the holiday. Mm-hmm. And that's just how it's written in the contract.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any further discussion? Well, let's look for a motion then.
I'll make a motion that we accept one floating holiday a year extra. And I'd like to see us consider that and maybe later another holiday. But I think giving two holidays at once is a little much.
So we dropped out the Christmas?
It's floating holiday. I thought the argument that if you wanted Christmas Eve off, you could have it, because it was a floating holiday.
But the office would be open.
Okay. But the office would be open, or, I mean, if everybody's off, I guess it's going to be closed. But the thing is, that would give people a perspective to take their Jewish holiday, their Muslim holiday, or whatever they wanted, or their husband or wife's birthday.
All right. We've got a proposal here. Is there a second for it? Right. How about another motion?
I'll make a motion that we accept the proposed December 24th and a floating holiday as proposed.
I'll second that.
Okay.
Okay, hold on.
We have a motion.
Rich. Okay.
And we have a second. Everyone in favor of the proposal, say aye.
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 Hi.
Thank you.
That's Chad on the other line.
Oh, thank you. Oh, hi, Chad.
Thank you.
Hi.
And any opposition? Nay. Opposed?
Got it.
Nay. 2-1. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Motion passes. Any public comments?
Yeah, I'd like to make a public comment. Lindsay Daly, for the record. I just really am
encouraged and excited by the involvement of the senators and the political involvement, and it just all is rolled up into one big ball. I've worked with Vernon, you know, in his newspaper days, a lot of community projects, and there's lots of credit to go around here, but I just see some great and wonderful things coming out of this. We're just right at the very tip, and I see this as just, we're approaching the crest, and the continued talent and focus, this is going to pay big dividends for the ratepayers and the board and the employees. I really, I'm just so excited about that. So
very good.
Thank you.
Good. Thank you. Is that you, Chad?
He's tired.
Press that other button, Chad.
We can't hear you.
Whoops, there he is.
He's put the smile on.
He was getting dressed.
Put your hands right by itself.
Yeah, be careful.
Oh, very good. Thank you. Any further public comment? Any trustee comments?
I have a comment.
Okay.
I would like to thank Christy and Crystal. I had an issue with billing. I have a rental, and my renter moved out on July 31st. The meter was read on the 1st, and I received a bill for $4 of energy and a $28 base charge. And so I walked in the office, and I wanted to be just a customer. I wanted the customer experience. And Crystal was there, and she didn't know who I was. And I just said, "Hey, I got a little problem with my bill here. I got billed for one day, but shouldn't that be
prorated?
You know, I shouldn't have one day, because I've had this happen before. You know, people go into the 15th, I pay half the base charge, they pay half." She goes, "No, that's the way it is. You get a base charge." So I said, "Okay, well, so next month I won't have a base charge because I already paid it for this month." "No, you get another base charge." So that just doesn't seem fair, you know. She says, "Well, I'll have Christy look at it." And I said, "Okay, have her give me a call." And so a couple hours later, Christy called me and said, "Yes, it should be prorated. There's a problem with the program. But I just wanted to, you know, I just wanted to be Joe customer coming in, you know, and that, you know, was taken care of."
Christy, did you do that because he was a board member?
No.
I did not.
Thank you.
Well, I did it because it was Richard Jones, customer of OPD.
There you go. If I can just make a quick comment on the labeling. I think that's very important with what's happened in the past. We don't want to go there necessarily, but I think, you know, to the crews and whatnot that are doing the labeling, I'm hoping that will save any traumatic stuff in the future, and as far as time goes as well. So I'd just like to thank you guys for doing that. I think that's extremely important. Whether it takes you a couple years to finish out at the end of the day, I think it's going to play big dividends, so thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Good comment.
This is Bob. I wanted to make a comment. I want to thank staff for being patient with us, helping educate us. A lot of us don't understand what you guys are going through and what's important to you. And anyway, I appreciate that it's hard for you to bring that stuff to us. And I appreciate you guys taking time and being patient with us, educating us on, you know, these important matters. Thank you.
Oh, good comment, Bob. Thank you. Thank you guys for coming and going through it.
Thank you.
Maybe you can send a smaller staff next time.
You're all coming back next month.
We don't get to use a spokesperson. Okay.
P.
Approval of next meeting.
Item approval P. of next meeting, September 16th at the Overton Boardroom.
I'll make a motion. Our next meeting September 16th, 3 p.m. in the Overton Boardroom.
I'd second.
Okay, we got a motion and a second. Are there any in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, we
got it.
We'll have an executive session after a
2-minute break.